and welcome to Mental Health Matters, a new show at Leeds Student Radio, which aims to bring awareness and understanding to those suffering from mental health issues and their supporters through open and honest conversation. Today's show is all about suicide awareness, a subject which I'm particularly passionate about because when I was 15, my friend passed away from suicide. Before we get onto the subject, I wanted to mention that this is a very triggering subject, and some of the content which is discussed in the show is likely to have topics which some listeners might find upsetting and or triggering, and I will be doing repeated trigger warnings throughout the show in case anyone's just tuned in, because obviously I don't want to upset anyone. So first, I wanted to talk a bit about suicide and why it's important that we begin to be more open about this topic. The World Health Organization estimates that each year approximately 1 million people die from suicide, and it is predicted that by 2020 the rate of death from suicide will increase to 1 every 20 seconds. Suicide is the third leading cause of death in 15 to 24 year olds, and weirdly enough, girls are twice as likely to attempt suicide than boys, but male attempts are four times as likely to be successful than the female ones. Personally, I find it very interesting that although people are unwilling to discuss suicide, it is the butt of many supposed jokes. For example, last year I went to visit one of my best friends in Manchester, and we went for a meal at Rev's. We've got one in Leeds, and I was getting my food, and the lady asked me, she was like, "Oh, do you want ketchup or suicide sauce?" And I paused, and I was like, "Sorry, what?" And she was like, "Oh, suicide sauce. We call it that because it's really, really hot." And that just kind of exemplifies what's so wrong about people's attitudes. People aren't willing to talk about it when it comes to a serious matter, but maybe because they feel so uncomfortable, they prefer to make jokes about it. Another thing that I wanted to mention was the bunny suicide calendar, and I used to love this when I was younger, and I'd forgotten all about it, and then I went home for the weekend with my mom, and I was just looking through Paper Chase, because it's great store, and I was looking through Paper Chase and I saw the bunny suicide calendar, and it's so insensitive, and it's also really not funny. People have died, you know, because of these things. Would you put up a bunny cancer calendar, like where bunnies are receiving different kinds of chemotherapy? No, then don't do the same for suicide. Anyway, now we're going to hear from Charlie about her suicide attempts, and she's part of the LGBT show here at Leeds Student Radio, so I'm really excited to have her on as a guest. Before we get onto her interview, I did want to mention that Charlie's interview does have some quite explicit information about her suicide attempts, including kind of like methods that she used, so if you are sensitive to that kind of topic, then it might be better to tune out for the next 15 minutes and then tune back in again once we've kind of like done that segment of the show. Hi Charlie, how are you?
Hi, I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming to speak to us today, because obviously suicide is a really difficult topic to talk about for anyone, but for you, because it's so personal, it's probably more difficult than most people.
Yeah, it's quite hard to talk about, but I think it's something that really does need to be talked about. So I'm very happy to be here today. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
Oh, amazing. We actually bonded at the Otley Run. No, not Otley Run, at the Fruity event. And we just bonded over mental health and ended up having like about...
The best kind of place to bond, you know. If you're going to make friends with someone, make it at Fruity.
It's so true. We went for a Tesco's trip and we were both just like, yes,
that is the making of a true
amazing
friendship right there, going to Tesco together.
So I was wondering, if you didn't mind, if you could tell us a bit about your own suicide attempts.
Okay, so there has been a couple.
Yeah.
I guess my first one was probably, sort of my first serious one.
Yeah.
Was probably about June 2014, maybe a little bit earlier, maybe sort of May time.
Mm.
And basically, I was really, really struggling with my mental health. I wasn't really receiving any help from anyone. I'd just been taken off antidepressants, like after being told, you know, by doctors that I didn't need them anymore. And I was in a really, really low place. And so I came home from university one day and I bought a lot of tablets and I took a lot of said tablets. Luckily, one of my flatmates came home, like, the house was empty at the time, and I sort of thought I was safe, and by safe, you know, I mean safe to the extent that I didn't think that anyone was going to walk in. But luckily, one of my flatmates ended up coming home, sort of asking for me, and seeing the sort of state that I was in, seeing I've probably taken about around 20 sort of tablets at this time, so not enough to kill me.
Yeah.
But if they hadn't walked in, then, you know, enough an hour or so later.
Yeah, very serious damage.
Yeah, and so we ended up going to A&E after that, and, you know, spoke to some doctors, spoke to the crisis team. There wasn't really any help offered to me. And so the following week, I then tried to jump in front of a train. I ended up being detained by the police. The train ended up getting diverted, but that was also something that, at the time, I was very, very sort of committed to killing myself. I just thought that, you know, life isn't really worth living anymore. And because I'd received so little help before, for me, it just seemed like it was the only way forward. And so, as I say, I tried to jump in front of a train. Luckily, someone could see, like one of the train guards could see I was looking quite distressed. So then, you know, using a walkie-talkie, got in touch with the guy on the train, and they diverted the train, and as I say, the police got involved, they detained me, and then I ended up in sort of a mental health facility. So they're sort of a couple of suicide attempts, but then since then, I've also tried to overdose once. Again, my girlfriend ended up coming home, and having to, because I was doing this behind a locked door, and she ended up like having to break the lock in, and, you know, getting an ambulance called and stuff like that. So It was again quite serious.
It sounds like it's a really difficult time, and so many points when you're talking, I shook my head because the care that you received was absolutely shocking. You know, you were taking off antidepressants when you clearly really, really needed them. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the care that I have received through the NHS, I realise that resources are very stretched.
Yeah.
But the care I have received, even now, to be honest, so this is, you know, a good sort of year and a half after my first serious suicide attempt. Even now, I feel like the care is absolutely awful, in the way that if I was feeling suicidal, if I was to call the NHS, the response that I tend to get, even like, you know, a couple of months ago, for example, I was very suicidal, and I tried, you know, calling the NHS, and I just felt incredibly let down. I was made to wait for over 3 hours. And then when I was spoken to, I was told to watch a movie, told to see friends. And, you know, it was 9 o'clock on a Sunday. They're not the kind of things you can do. No. Especially when you're feeling that ill.
Yeah.
Even now, I'm finding the help not particularly great.
Yeah, like it is, I think kind of seeing friends and all that, it's great if you're feeling depressed, but I think it does reach a point where if you're feeling suicidal, self-care can only take you so far. And if you get to that point, you do probably need to seek more serious help than having a nice bath and reading a book.
Definitely. Like, as you say, you know, sometimes having a nice bath, reading a book can be really, really helpful.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, the same. For example, if someone was having a heart attack, you wouldn't say to them, oh, you know, go have a bath, go to a cafe with friends.
Yeah.
You know, you'd call an ambulance, you'd get it to them straight away. And for me, okay, one's physical, one's mental, but both situations could potentially be very deadly.
Mm. And looking kind of back now that you're in a bit of a healthier point, obviously I don't want to use the term recovered, but now that you're at kind of a healthier point, what do you kind of think about the thought processes that you were having at that time?
I think at the time, looking back now, it's really hard to say because I feel like I'm in a much better place now.
Yeah.
But looking back then, as I say, I wasn't receiving great support. I think also I was in quite a lot of denial. I didn't want to accept the fact that I was ill. And so I think, although looking back now, it looks irrational, at the time, it just seemed like the rational thing to do.
Yeah.
It seemed at the time like it was the only option for me, the only way that I could go forward. And as I say, looking back now, of course, it wasn't the only way I could go forward. It's probably the worst possible way I could go forward. But it's very, very hard to describe how you feel when you're not in that situation.
Yeah.
And
kind of like thinking about those feelings, what do you think caused them? Was there any Was there any particular circumstances, or was it just your diagnosis that kind of built up over time and made you think those things?
Well, the thing is, when you are feeling suicidal, you know, when you do try and commit suicide, the first sort of thing that's said to you is, what's going on in your life? Why has this happened? You know, how's your financial situation? How are things going with your partner? There must be something wrong for you to be feeling like this. And actually, there wasn't anything wrong. There was no circumstances that were affecting me. I was in a very good relationship with my partner. I had a lot of friends and family who were very supportive. I was financially okay. I was doing well at my degree. But despite this, I just felt like there was almost like a cloud of darkness over me that just wouldn't go away. And no matter how much I looked at my life and thought, you know what, from the outside, I look really, really lucky.
Yeah.
When it came to my feelings, I just felt absolutely awful. And so I think a lot of the time, it wasn't what was happening in my life, it was just how I felt. And almost by people sort of presuming there was something in my life, presuming that this was because something tragic had happened, that actually made me feel worse, because I was like, you know, are my feelings not valid? Should something bad have happened for me to be feeling like this? And so it just made me feel like, you know, I was insignificant, and like I was almost, you know, craving for attention, that I didn't deserve the attention because nothing bad had happened.
Yeah, and kind of going along that line with people who say those very unhealthy things, I've heard a lot of the time, particularly when I was researching for this segment, I've heard a lot of people kind of throw around the phrase that suicide is selfish, and obviously I completely disagree with that, but I wanted to get your perspective on those words.
To be honest, there is nothing that annoys me more
than,
you know, when people say that suicide is selfish. At the end of the day, you've got to look at depression like any other illness. If someone dies of cancer, you know, they're not selfish. If someone dies of, you know, complications with some illness they have, they're not selfish. And in the same way, people with mental illnesses, people who die from suicide, these people aren't selfish. These people are ill. And it's important that you look at them like that. Committing suicide isn't a selfish act. For me, when I was in that really, really low point, for me, it seemed like a really selfless act. I thought, you know what? By being down all the time, I'm causing my friends and family a lot of pain. If I'm gone, they won't have to feel that pain anymore. They won't have to keep worrying about me because they'll have no one to worry about. And so I presumed that me being out of the world, me committing suicide, would actually make them happier. And so, you know, for me, I mean, I can't speak for everyone, but for me personally, when I was feeling suicidal, the reason that I tried to commit suicide was because I thought it was a very, very selfless act as opposed to selfish. And so, you know, if you are someone who thinks it's selfish, believe me, when you're in that position, the last thing you think you're doing is being selfish.
Yeah. And kind of looking back on those dark times, I'm sure that you had like a load of really supportive people around you, but was there any one particular person who really helped you to get to the place where you are today?
Definitely. My girlfriend, my partner, the most supportive person in the world.
Oh,
I know. When we sort of started going out, it was probably about 6 months, maybe almost a year, before I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder. But during that whole time, I had a lot of bad episodes. There were a lot of times I was feeling suicidal. And, you know, it wasn't easy for her, especially, you know, when it got to the stage that I started trying to commit suicide, to the stage I got a diagnosis, because I was in and out of hospital a lot. I was going to appointment after appointment, and we hadn't been together that long. So, you know, I wouldn't have blamed her if she'd have turned around and said, you know what, Charlie, this is too much. You know, I'm quite young myself. I don't need this. But nope, she told me that she would support me every step of the way. And when I say that she's been supportive, I mean, she has been so supportive. She'll come to every appointment with me. Oh. She'll take time out of her day, even if it's day after day after day. If I'm feeling particularly bad, you know, she won't be like, oh, cheer up, life's not that bad. If I'm under the covers, she'll literally just be like, can I come chill with you in bed all night? We can watch films, we can do what you want. And she just does anything she can to help me. She realizes that, you know, my illness isn't my fault. And so she'll just do anything she can to help me recover. And even if I'm in denial about stuff myself, if I'm in a particularly good place, as in like a kind of too good place, or if I'm in a particularly bad place, she can often sort of spot the signs before I do. And I can be quite stubborn as well and be like, you know what, I hate doctors, I'm not going to the doctors. But she will make sure that I see a doctor. She'll come with me. She'll go with me to the appointment. And she has just been my absolute rock.
I'm already in love with your girlfriend.
Luckily, I am too.
That's a good thing. And obviously it's not useful to play the what if game, but do you think if there had been less stigma around the topic of mental illness and suicide, do you think that maybe you wouldn't have got to that dark place, or do you think it was kind of just a matter of inevitability?
I mean, I think it's obviously very difficult to say because, you know, as you said yourself, playing the what if game is quite difficult because you just don't know. But I personally feel that if the help had been more readily available, if there was less stigma, and if I'd got help from the start, even if I'd gotten help straight away after that first suicide attempt, I personally, as I say, I can't say for certain, but I'm not entirely sure that there would have been the second attempt. You know, if I'd sort of started medication, if I'd started speaking to people about it, then, you know, it's hard to say, but honestly, I'm not going to say that I wouldn't have tried to commit suicide again.
Yeah.
But all I can say is I think that I would have been in a much better place a lot sooner.
Yeah. And just everything would have been a lot easier if you had had that support.
Definitely. No, so, I completely agree.
Wake up, NHS.
Yeah.
And moving on to happier things. How would you say that your life has improved since your suicide attempts? Do you kind of think that it was worth not dying for the life that you have now?
100%. Like, because, as I say, I had a couple of suicide attempts and I was in a really bad place. I took sort of about 6 months out of university last year. Mm. And I think it's really what I needed. I had 6 months where, you know, I didn't touch drink. I, you know, kept taking medication. I had a lot of help, not just, you know, from various health professionals, but also from, like, people around me, my friends, my family. And that's just made the world of difference. And looking at my life now, I am so, so, so glad I'm alive. I absolutely love my life to bits. And, you know, I'm not saying that I don't have bad days, because I can have some really, really bad, tough days still. But the thing is, I know that these tough days are only temporary. And, you know, each day, things are getting better and better.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm ever going to be at a stage where I can say I've recovered, because I know that's unrealistic. But each day, I feel like I'm recovering slowly. And even if things are bad, when they're bad, they're nowhere near as bad as they have been. And for me, that's just, it's incredible. I feel in such a good place right now.
Honestly, Charlie, you've just blown me away with that answer. Like, I think you've blown all of the listeners away, because it's just such a heartwarming response. And I think, you know, kind of to anyone who is dealing with these issues, they can maybe see that there is a light at the end of the tunnel and there are steps that they can take to kind of work through what they're going through. And if, kind of hypothetically, this is, again, a touchy subject, but if kind of like one of our listeners was maybe considering taking their own life, what do you have anything to say to them?
I think, personally, okay, I've had trouble with the NHS, but I know people who have had really good experiences with them. So I think, first of all, don't be afraid to see your GP. If you are feeling low, make sure you go and see your GP, because even if things, you know, take quite a long time, even if it takes you a while to get help, in the end, I'm not going to say everything's great with the NHS at the moment, because as I said, I'm still having some problems, but yeah. I am on good medication now. And I do know that if I am in a bad way, there are some great places in Leeds especially, actually, that I can go to. But also, I think it's important that you communicate with people around you. This doesn't have to be every single person you know. Like, I posted a Facebook status about it because I wanted to be sort of quite frank about it, quite upfront about it.
Yeah.
And also try and sort of raise awareness. But that doesn't mean you have to. Even if you confide, like me, in a partner, maybe in a trusted family member, a friend. I think it's just so, so important, because if they don't know you're feeling like that, then there's nothing that they can do to help you. Whereas, I obviously can't assure you, but I'm pretty sure if someone cares about you, you know, when you're healthy, they're going to care about you when you're sick too. And they're going to want to do everything they can to support you. So just make sure you don't suffer in silence and try and get help, whether it's from a doctor, friends, family, or, you know, all three. It's so, so important.
Yeah. Okay, that's all we've got time for, but I wish we could chat for 24 hours, for the 24 hours that LSR is on, because your responses have been incredible. Thank you so much, Charlie, for coming on here.
Thank you for having me.
What an amazing girl Charlie is. To be able to be so honest about something so difficult and personal, I personally find that really, really inspirational. And now I wanted to talk about the devastating effect suicide has on loved ones. So, as I mentioned before, when I was 15, my friend committed suicide, which was a very unexpected and traumatic experience.
To this day, I still remember her as the most amazing person I've ever met. She had so much integrity. She was always the one to speak out against the crowd. She wasn't afraid to have her voice heard when it came to important matters. And since her death, I've really tried to emulate this because I find it such an admirable quality. It might seem strange, but to this day, I really do blame myself. There's no logic in this way of thinking, but something deep inside me says that I could have done something to prevent her death. And I think that that irrational guilt, which for me, I don't think will ever go away, is a really, really common thing for those who have lost loved ones to suicide to feel. Something she always used to say was that if she died, no one would remember her. We had kind of multiple conversations about that. And I think that that's a very common thing for suicidal people to think. You know, they don't really think that their life is worth anything, so why would they continue living? But I wanted to say that that's so untrue. I know that you might think that that might be just her, that she's different from you, but I can promise you that's not the case. I still think about her every single day, and it's only in the past few months that I've been able to say her name out loud, because even 4 years on, the topic feels too raw and painful to openly acknowledge. I think of her whenever an episode of Doctor Who is on TV, whenever I see someone eating chocolate ice cream, her favourite, whenever I go to a certain place in my garden where we sat when she came to my house, whenever I go ice skating, my favourite memory with her, and in so many more situations in my life. The world is full of her for all of those who loved her, and so if you're considering suicide, please, please remember that people will care, and the effect of your death will change people's lives forever. Continuing on that line, if anyone listening is considering taking their own life, we have Bob from the Samaritans here to talk about the services that they provide. Hi, Bob. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
My pleasure.
So why don't you tell us a bit about the Samaritans?
Well, Samaritans has been around now for over 60 years, and essentially we are a listening service. We're available 24/7, 365 days of the year. And it's so easy for people to make contact with us by their preferred media, whether it's phone, text, email. And although we appreciate it can be very daunting picking up the phone and speaking to a stranger, there isn't really another organisation like ours where we're available there just to listen, to support, to gently guide you through, and to encourage you to offload and talk to us about what's really bothering you.
Yeah, and say if someone did get in contact with your services, what kind of help could they expect from you?
Well, Samaritans, although we don't give advice, we often find that people, if they start to talk about their situation and can look at the possible options that they have, they usually find a way through themselves. We know very little about someone when they call us.
Yeah.
And we respect that they only tell us, first of all, what they want to tell us, but also only tell us their side of the story. So it would be very wrong for us to offer a path of direction of the way to solve a problem. It's up to us just to gently support that person, let them talk it through, and perhaps with some open questions, try and help them to see the way forward.
Yeah, and I know that you're most well known for your phoning-in service, but are there any other kinds of ways that people can contact you with you?
Yes, there are. I mean, mentioning the phone service, we've just gone free phone on 116 123, which is a big step forward for a lot of people who otherwise might not have been able to contact us. But we offer a very successful email service, which of course is international now, and anyone can email us at joe@samaritans.org. And we aim to get an email reply back to them within about 4 hours. More recently, we embraced a texting service, which again, it takes a lot of resources to maintain that service, but we do our best throughout the whole day, and people can text us on 07725 90 90 90, and we aim to get a text reply back to them within about 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's really, really great that you do things not just with the phone, because I know a lot of people suffer with social anxiety, so they find it incredibly difficult to actually pick up the phone and talk to you. And I've heard from a lot of my friends who maybe have gone through difficult times that a lot of the time they feel unworthy of help and support, so they don't contact your services. What would you say to them?
What you've said is so right, and we do hear it a lot from people that they feel that perhaps the issue that they've got isn't so dire that they need to be calling us. And the first thing we have to do is reassure them we're not just there for people who are suicidal. We're there for anybody who feels they want to talk. And when I take a call, I have to get the message across that the most important person to me at that moment is that person who's calling us.
Mm.
Give them reassurance. Hopefully get them to feel at ease. And maybe they don't feel able to talk very much about the situation then. They may be embarrassed, shy, a little bit surprised that a human being is there maybe in the middle of the night. But to encourage them that if they feel able to call us back again, when they've perhaps prepared what they want to say, think things through, then it's okay to do so. Call us again and again and again.
Yeah, I think that's so inspirational. And what would you do if someone close to you is in a crisis situation and is maybe very suicidal? And I know from my own experience, I felt very helpless. So I think it'd be great if you could give us some advice.
Yes, as I said, Samaritans don't give advice, but I will make an exception. I think the hardest three words possibly to say to someone, but the most effective, is a simple, "Are you okay?" It can be so effective for that person to feel that somebody actually does care.
Mm.
And whilst it's not going to wave the magic wand, it is really just holding out a hand of empathy and to show someone that actually you are bothered about them and you do care about them.
Yeah.
And then perhaps to gently ask them, "Have you thought of speaking to someone?"
Yeah, I think, again, that was a great answer. And thank you so much for being with us here today. Your answers were really informative and I'm sure that they'll have helped a lot of people.
Thank you.
Once again, that was Bob from the Samaritans, who really, really kindly came on and spoke to us. So thank you so much to him for taking the time out of his day to do that. Unfortunately, that's all for this show, but thank you so much for listening in. I was incredibly, incredibly nervous about doing this show because, like with any topic of mental illness, it's such a huge thing and you really want to do it justice, but particularly with suicide, because it's so personal to me, I wanted to do it justice, and hopefully I have. But thank you so much for listening in. It really is much appreciated. And remember, if you are struggling, there are free confidential services like the Samaritans which can help you. That's it for today, but please do tune in next week for the last show of Mental Health Matters, where I'll be putting together a show about the best bits of everything that we've done. Just on a quick last note, very excitingly and very surprisingly, I've been nominated for 3 awards at the Leeds Student Radio Awards, and the nominations are Best Female Newcomer, Best Interview, and Best Speech. And just to say, the best interview was for my eating disorder recovery with my friend Tom. So if you think that I should win the award, then please vote for me, because it'd be kind of cool to win an award. But yeah, that's it for me today.
This is Leeds Student Radio.
Sound.
Students.
In Leeds.
Delivering over 100 hours of broadcasting made by 300 students every week.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello and welcome.
And
it's all about you.
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 You. You. You. Looking for a house next year?
Then come to Spencer Properties for a friendly, professional and stress-free service.
With a wide range of properties in Hyde Park, Headingley, Woodhouse, Burley and the city centre.
Platinum membership with Unipol.
We are the perfect way to find your first home.
And we've been voted the safest landlord by Leeds University Union.
Spencer Properties. Come find your new home.
Take a trip to Italy with La Bezzi Italian Restaurant.
You can bring your own alcohol and make use of our 10% student discount every Sunday to Thursday
on a wide range of top quality dishes straight from the heart of Italy. Come visit us on Clarendon Road, just a stone's throw away from Leeds University.
La Bezzi, authentic Italian cuisine.
You look tired, mate. You could do with a flat white coffee.
Open from 8 a.m. with 3 guest blends. This ain't your normal cup of joe.
Come down to Brudenell Grove in Hyde Park and tuck into our range of food and drinks alongside free Wi-Fi.
We're open from morning to the late hours,
giving you plenty of time to kick back with your mates.
East Village,
proud sponsors of the LSR Breakfast Show.
Are you looking for an incredible night of local music? Don't worry. The Transmission 2016 is coming soon to Leeds Student Radio.
Leeds Student Radio brings you The Beat.
Every weekday at 6, we'll be giving you the latest on student news, views and lifestyle in your city.
Brought to you by Amber Cars, you'll be the first to know what's going on.
Call us on 01132 311 366 or download the app
for the quickest taxi service in Leeds.
The Beat is the only place to be.
Broadcasting 24 hours a day from Leeds University Union.
The sound
of students in Leeds.
This is Leeds Student Radio.